From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting this week from the Air America studios in New York City. On today's program, we're delving into one of the most heated issues plaguing religion and politics today, clergy endorsements of political candidates. Yes, every political season we hear of pastors and other leaders of houses of worship testing the limits of politicking from the pulpit. And I say testing the limits because, well, let me explain some basics. Under current IRS law, it is illegal for any house of worship to endorse a political candidate from the pulpit. It's illegal because a tax-exempt entity like a church, a synagogue, or a mosque cannot get involved in partisan politics and remain tax-exempt. That's the law. But now, if one conservative legal organization had its way, that law would no longer exist. The organization is called the Alliance Defense Fund. Now get this. They, the ADF, are calling for pastors and preachers all over America on next Sunday, September 28th, to purposefully ignore the IRS rules and deliberately preach partisan political sermons. The organizers of this pulpit project claim that this is a free speech issue. Whoa. Back up just a minute. The religious right is worried about free speech? I don't think that's the issue. Look, friends, this is not a movement aimed at defending free speech nearly so much as it's a movement to secure the rights of houses of worship to endorse political candidates without jeopardizing their tax-free status. I'm going to be preaching to the choir about this one shortly. I can't wait. They've got it in segment two, so I'll wait. But first, I want to get to the bottom of what exactly the Alliance Defense Fund is proposing. And I'm joined now by my colleague, Ann Slaughter. Ann is Director of Research and Education at the Interfaith Alliance. And welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you.
So you recently attended a talk given by the Alliance Defense Fund at the Value Voters Summit. Boy, that's a handful.
It was a crowded room, too. They packed that room full.
This is a gathering, friends, of religious voters hosted by conservative religious groups. And as I understand it, in this particular session, the Alliance Defense Fund was in charge. Their lawyers discussed this pulpit project repeatedly and said this is not a political ploy. This is not about getting the right to give political endorsements. Huh. So, Ann, what is this about?
I tell you what, I was very interested in that. They were not making the argument about we want to be able to endorse candidates. They were making a very, what I would consider a traditional conservative anti-government argument. It was all about, we don't want the IRS telling our churches what to do. It was the biggest applause line of the day was when he said, we're going to sue the IRS. The people went crazy. They loved it.
So the people in the audience believed what they heard.
Absolutely.
The ADF says that this ban has a chilling effect that causes clergy to be scared away from talking about anything controversial. I testified in the first congressional hearing that was held on the possibility of changing the law on this very matter. And in that hearing, I heard the late D. James Kennedy of the infamous Coral Ridge Ministries make that argument before Congress. And I remember turning to him and saying, Dr. Kennedy, we must not live in the same nation. Did they give examples, specific examples of this? How do they back up that claim?
They didn't give specific examples of the chilling effect. And really what I thought was most interesting was they made another argument a little bit later in the presentation about the fact that the law itself is only sporadically enforced and is weak, sort of a toothless tiger argument. And it seemed to me like we're going to throw a million things against the wall and see what sticks, because if it's a toothless tiger law, how can it have a chilling effect? If you don't think the law is going to be enforced, how are you chilled?
That's really good, Ann. They have said that this is about free speech. It doesn't seem to me to be about free speech. They have said that it's a constitutional issue because churches automatically have the right to tax exemption. I don't buy that, and I don't believe it has a chilling effect. You go into any religious right congregation on almost any Sunday, and you will hear a sermon on a controversial issue of one kind or another. Now, the ADF still says they're going to push this issue, and if necessary, take it all the way to the Supreme Court. That I do believe. So if you had to tell our listeners in a few words what's going on here, what do you think's going on here?
They are itching for a fight. They have pastors in every one of the federal judicial circuits lined up, ready to very purposefully break the law on
Sunday. Now say that again. They have pastors in
every one of the federal judicial circuits. They're going to try to put a test case through that will challenge the law, and they want to have this law challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court level and force a Supreme Court ruling on this issue. Now, test cases don't occur quickly, but it's something you start and you work through it over time, and I believe that they believe that if the outcome of the election is such that more conservative judges will be appointed, that sets a much better situation for them to be able to get a conservative ruling by the time this case wends its way through the court system.
Ann Slaughter is Director of Research and Education at the Interfaith Alliance. She's hard at work on Our Own Election, Your Projects, advising houses of worship about how to follow the IRS guidelines. So please visit our website, theinterfaithalliance.org, for more information. And you have just made my blood boil, and I hope that everyone that is listening will say, if they want to fight on this one, let's go.
Let's go.
Thank you,
Welton.
Coming up on State of Belief, are you still wondering if there's more at work here than an issue of free speech? Well, I'll share some of my thoughts after the break. Please stick around. Welcome back, everyone. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. And on today's show, we're talking about a debate raging around houses of worship and the IRS. There's a long-standing ban that's been on the books since the early 1950s. This regulation by the IRS essentially says that as a tax-exempt entity, a church or other house of worship cannot, engage in partisan political activity. It's a ban I wholeheartedly endorse, but recently a group of religiously and socially conservative lawyers known as the Alliance Defense Fund have organized around this issue, arguing that the ban is equal to government censorship of sermons, and they hope to overturn the IRS regulations through a project they're calling the Pulpit Project. Here's one of their representatives addressing a group at the recent Value Voters Summit, a conference of religious voters organized by the Family Research Council, you're about to hear Eric Stanley of the Alliance Defense Fund.
There must be no restrictions on what pastors can say to their congregation in order to lead their congregation in these troubling times. That's what the Pulpit Initiative is all about. It's about freeing pastors to speak without restriction, without intimidation, without fear of punishment from the government, without having to fear that the censors are going to be looking over their shoulders to say, you can't say this, but you can say that. It is simply not a place for the government to go.
Well, friends, I hear that statement by representatives of the Alliance Defense Fund, and it strikes me as an invitation to share with you a Preaching to the Choir segment right now, and I am more than ready to get right to it.
Amen. 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 With the horns now.
Let's begin with some basic honesty here. A bit of straightforward clarity. Claiming freedom of speech as their cause and religion as their motivation, these people are clamoring to entangle institutions of religion and government for the benefit of religion. No. Not for religion in general, for their religion. Their religion, which in their minds should be the established religion in this nation. They want to make churches major players in the American political process. This group, the Alliance Defense Fund, is calling for religious leaders across the nation to go to their pulpits on Sunday, September 28th, to violate current law by endorsing a candidate or condemning a candidate for public office as a part of their sermons. For all practical purposes, turning houses of worship into precinct halls for political campaigning. Now, parenthetically, let me just observe, I suppose the ADF has chosen to leave out Jews, Seventh-day Baptists, and other religions that maybe they don't know gather for worship on a day other than Sunday. Religious leaders involved in this protest from their pulpits will tell members of their congregations how they should vote or how they should not vote. Some, too, are trying to make it legal for houses of worship to use a portion of their tax-deductible offerings to support the campaigns of the candidates their churches endorse. You're hearing me correctly, friends. If you think I'm making this up, I wish I were. I can't stress strongly enough my objections to these efforts. Let's look at the bottom line. The Constitution of the United States prescribes the proper relationship between institutions of religion and government. That relationship is characterized by those institutions' independence from each other. Now, I want to assure you that no one's freedom is being compromised. No minister's free speech is being violated by federal election laws or IRS policies governing the role of houses of worship in political campaigns. Today, right now, while you're listening to this program, houses of worship and their leaders are free to endorse a candidate for the presidency of the United States or for any other elected office and to publicize that endorsement. However, they are not free to make such endorsements and exercise such influence and continue their status as a house of worship supported by offerings and financial gifts that are tax deductible. American taxpayers should not be made responsible for supporting partisan political activity done in the name of religion. The present arrangement protects the Constitution's promise that the government will not support an establishment of religion. But the issue before us is not a legal or constitutional matter alone, not by a long shot. I am as concerned about what such a practice in houses of worship would do to the integrity and credibility of religion as about what it would do to weaken the Constitution. Partisan politicking in houses of worship will divide religion in this nation in a way nothing else has been able to divide it so far. Churches will become known more for their political identity, red or blue, than for the ministries they perform, the denominations they represent, or the progressive or fundamentalist approach to life they commend. We don't need a change in law that encourages leaders of houses of worship to tell their people they have a special word from God about God's candidate in the election. I can guarantee you those words will be sounded and the claim will be made for each of the two competing candidates. Each side claiming God prefers their candidate. But now here's a question for you. Why should you even care about this? Many of you have no formal relationship with a house of worship. I suspect some of you, especially those of you who have been hurt by organized religion, might even smile to see a house of worship take a hit or two because of its messing around with partisan politics. But you should care. First, you people care about free speech as much as I do. And please don't be fooled. This rationale about protecting free speech would only open the door to religious leaders being even more highly visible in elections that are supposed to be about political confidence, not religious superiority. So yes, you would have a reason to fear for the future of free speech if government was attempting to tell religious leaders what to say. But believe me, that is not the case here. Religious leaders can talk about anything they please in their houses of worship. They can spew hate. They can present untruths as truths. They can revise American history. They can call parishioners to move beyond hate. They can present support for civil rights for all people as a moral as well as a political issue. What they cannot do is tell their congregation whom to vote for. And in this instance, the government is trying to protect the Constitution. It is not appropriate for partisan politics to take place in houses of worship with tax-free status. Here is another instance of the religious right borrowing good language and lofty justification to advance a cause that, if successful, ultimately will hurt both religion and politics, as well as further divide the nation and weaken the government. I know you can see it. I wish everybody could see it. Winning an election is not worth losing the integrity of your religion and the constitutional basis of our nation.
Amen. Amen.
I'm Welton Getty. This is State of Belief. We've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, oh, we're far from finished. More on the clergy, more on free speech, elections, and yes, the IRS. Stick around.
I'm gonna let it shine, yeah, yeah. This lit light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine.
Hello again, friends. I'm Welton Getty, and this is State of Belief. On today's show, politics in the pulpit. Under the current IRS law, houses of worship cannot engage in overtly political activity. That is to say that as a tax-exempt organization, a church or a synagogue or a mosque cannot campaign for a specific candidate, cannot endorse one candidate over another. I'll be honest with you, it's a rule that I respect. Houses of worship are exactly that, houses of worship, not campaign headquarters. But you can bet not everyone agrees, and currently there's a national effort underway, led by lawyers from the religious right, that encourages pastors across the country to blatantly defy tax law and to stand up in front of their congregations next Sunday and offer political endorsements. The organizers of this event claim that the law is the equivalent of a gag rule, that it hinders the free speech of pastors. They call it government intrusion. And they're hoping that if enough pastors defy the law and enough lawsuits result, that there will be the opportunity to eventually change the law. Well, as president of the Interfaith Alliance, I've launched a project of my own. It's called the Clergy Pledge, a petition signed by an interfaith group of clergy who each pledges not to endorse candidates. We all agree this is a potentially dangerous practice, and I'm joined right now by one of the signers of this pledge, the Reverend Joel Hunter. Joel's been on State of Belief several times before. Reverend Hunter is the senior pastor of Northland Church in Florida. Joel, thank you for joining us once again here on State of Belief.
You're welcome. Glad to be back.
Now, among the number of clergy who have signed on to our clergy pledge, I'm sure that each one has come to the issue in his or her own way. If you don't mind, tell our listeners why you decided to add your name to that list.
Well, Walton, I've been thinking this through for a long time. I wrote a book about 20 years ago called Prayer, Politics, and Power. And one of the things that I think is very tempting for the church is to try to accomplish spiritual ends through political power. I think every Christian ought to be involved as a matter of civic duty, as a matter of rendering unto Caesar what is Caesar's, as well as God what is God's. Having said that, though, I think it's an individual conscience and prayer matter, and my caution is that pastors would lead their churches to become lobbying groups rather than congregations. And so I'm just very skittish when it comes to giving the signal that it would be good for churches to become political entities.
Well, I don't have to tell you that there is another side to that debate, and some of those people on the other side of the spectrum who actually want clergy to have the right to endorse candidates say that this ban on political activity by houses of worship somehow hinders free speech, that the government shouldn't tell pastors that what they can or can't say. Have you ever felt as if your free speech from the pulpit was compromised, that your sermons were somehow hindered by that ban?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I do have the free speech to say who, if I am for a particular individual or if I'm going to vote for somebody, I can do that. I can do that now. But to presume to speak for a congregation or to presume to speak for God, mm-hmm. When it comes to usurping the individual right to hear from God as to who they could vote for, and to put the pressure on people of a congregation to feel like they would not belong unless they went along with a pastor or even a governing board that said this congregation is going to do going to be for this candidate or this party because they're the right ones. I simply think that that's not a free speech matter. I think we have free speech. Any individual can say what they want to say. But when it comes to I'm going to speak on behalf of this entire group, that then doesn't become free speech. That becomes something else.
Joel, this is a little bit redundant, but I want to ask it anyway. If one of your colleagues calls you on the phone and says, we want you to participate in naming the candidate that you endorse as God's candidate during this pulpit protest that's being put together, tell me why in the world you wouldn't do that. How would you respond?
Well, in the first place, I would respond with no, I won't do that. To me, this fosters spiritual immaturity. It's like I'm saying to our people, don't pray to God and ask Him for direction. You take it from me as to what the right way is to go. The second reason I wouldn't do that is because I don't want to politicize the church. And the third reason is to somehow subjugate this transcendent God into one political party or another, or one candidate or another, I think, in my way of thinking, is insulting toward the transcendence of God.
The Alliance Defense Fund that's sponsoring this pulpit protest project has said that in their interest in overturning the current IRS regulations, they're going to push this as far as they possibly can push it, even if it means taking it all the way to the Supreme Court. If they were able to overturn it, what do you see as the most dangerous results for politics and for religion?
Well, it's possible. Well, God's still God. You know, we serve a sovereign God, so He's going to work all of it. No matter what happens, He's still in control. We can all breathe a sigh of relief and not take ourselves so seriously, because we have taken God so seriously. My caution is that the church would become a prime target for different lobbying voices, that the church would not be holy, that the word means separate, for a primarily spiritual emphasis anymore. It would become, as an entity, as a body, the target for so many influences, just like the government is now. And it would be different people trying to get their way, coming to a pastor saying, look, you know, this is my interest. And so they would be literally lobbying the pastors and lobbying the governing boards of churches for political agenda. And I want to say, these people who are doing this, I respect, you know, what I think they're trying to do, and they're trying to I think do the best they know how to do. So I don't treat them disrespectfully, but I think the implications and the consequences of this kind of movement, if it were successful, would adulterate the church and our agenda. And we simply don't need it in order to be effective. You know, we can teach spiritual principles. People are big enough, you know, they can put on their big boy pants and interpret it politically and go out and vote as they want to individually under the guidance of God.
Joel, one of the things that I always respect in talking with you is the way in which you come to an issue having thought very carefully about it, and thought from a theological perspective as well as from a political perspective. I want to ask you, if you don't mind, to model that for us just for a moment. And if you're not comfortable doing this, you can just say no. But how did you reason through whether or not to pray at the Democratic Convention, and how does that relate to our conversation here about what happens in churches?
One of the things that I have always loved to do is include prayer at public events, because it's part of the history of our country. You know, Benjamin Franklin, who was probably the least religious of all of our founding fathers, stood up at the first Constitutional Congress when they were just wrangling. You know, they were not making progress, and he said, you know, if a sparrow cannot fall from the sky without the knowledge of God, is it likely an empire can rise without His aid? And so it's always been a part of our country. But when it came to why would I do this at a certain party's political convention, you know, and I certainly would have done it as well for the Republicans. I was just invited to the Democrats. But the reason that I went was as simple as I want to help people ask for God's help if they are believers. And it was not much deeper than that.
Joel Hunter is senior pastor of Northland Church in Florida. Joel, we turn to you because we respect you and we learn from you every time we talk to you. Thank you for speaking with me on State of Belief and for your contribution to our clergy pledge.
My great pleasure, Weldon. Thank you for your leadership.
For more information on the Interfaith Alliance's Election Year Project and our clergy pledge, to see who else has signed it, or if you're a clergy member and you'd like to add your name to our growing list, please visit our website, interfaithalliance.org. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio. Up next, we enter one of our very favorite times on the show, the time in which we give out the intersection awards, awards that come from what happens at that intersection between religion and politics. Now, you can bet we'd give a red light to any pastor who stands up in the pulpit and endorses a candidate. But what other stories are in the news this week that we want to highlight? Well, there are some. Find out when we come back. We'll see you in just a moment. Welcome back, friends. I'm Welton Gaddy. The door opens. Press Secretary of the Interfaith Alliance, William Blake, walks in. I know it's time for the Intersection Awards. He's loaded with Intersection Awards to dole out this week to some newsmakers, both good and bad. William, welcome.
Thanks, Welton.
What do you got today?
Well, we've got two awards today, one of the yellow kind and one of the red variety. And so I thought, let us proceed with caution towards the yellow light, which we will give to the Pope for his efforts around interfaith dialogue. After a lecture 2 years ago in which he called Islam violent and irrational, the Pope has recently attempted to engage in interfaith dialogue with the Muslim community. Now, this attempt to build bridges sounds praiseworthy, but the Pope admits he has a second objective. He said last week, quote, "The goal of ecumenical and interreligious dialogue is to seek and deepen a knowledge of the truth. It is therefore a noble and obligatory task for every believer, since Christ himself is the truth," unquote. Now, Welton, is proselytizing a legitimate goal of interfaith dialogue?
Well, actually, as you very well know, it's not. And true interfaith dialogue or interreligious dialogue involves all of the parties coming together with mutual respect and with each expecting to learn something from the other and perhaps grow into a deeper spirituality because of the other. So, no, I'm not real pleased at the motivation. I have to say, though, that at the same time, I am at a point in thinking about the importance of the necessity of interreligious dialogue that I'm almost willing to start with some poor motivation just to get people talking, because it is so crucial that we know how to talk with each other in the midst of a crisis, that I would start at a place I don't really prefer to start.
In the hopes that we finish in a better place.
Absolutely.
Well, let's go from proceeding with caution to slamming on the brakes and hand out a red light to the Family Research Council, who organized last weekend's Values Voters Summit. Now, at that event, a vendor set up a display to sell to participants at the event Obama waffle mix. The box of this product depicted the Democratic nominee as a racial stereotype on the front of the box and wearing Arab-like headdress on the top flap of the box. The Associated Press said the box evoked memories of the old image of Aunt Jemima of the pancake syrup variety, and the Family Research Council did shut down the vendor, but not until the second day of the conference. But they knew in advance what the vendors would be selling. That sounds like a little, too late, right, Welton?
It certainly does to me, and I don't feel any remorse at all in making the red light as bright a red as we can make it. That's the way to demean religion, to misrepresent the spirit of this nation, to divide race against race and politician against politician, and to do everything that is the other side of integrity and religion. Good for you for giving a big red light.
Well, it's stories like these where I wish I didn't find them coming across my desk every day, but I do.
William, I need to tell the listeners to the show that you're going to be leaving us, and I have said this to you in private. I will say it to you in public. You're one of the finest young men that has ever worked at the Interfaith Alliance. You bring a combination of passion and wisdom, unusual insight for a person of your age. I got a question for you. What are you going to do with your life?
Well, I think I could try and guess where I might be 20 years from now.
Do it.
But I don't know. I think that guess would be wrong. But what I do know for a fact is that it has been an incredible honor working with you and the Interfaith Alliance for the past 2 years, and I have treasured every single opportunity I've had to work with a State of Belief, either on the mic or behind the mic. This is an incredible show and an incredible organization. It's with a very heavy heart that I depart, so thank you for the opportunity.
William, thank you. There have been times, as you know, I thought that you were going to take over the show and you would have your own theme music. But you've been a great contributor to the show, and we're grateful for that. And my guess is sometime in the future, you'll get a radio show of your own, and we'll hear from you. And I hope that maybe you'll let us have a few minutes on it if you do.
Thanks, Welton.
Well, that's our show for this week, friends. Remember to share your thoughts about the show by going to stateofbelief.com and clicking on the Contact Us page. We absolutely love to hear from you. And as always, we must remind you that State of Belief is produced by Interfaith Alliance Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, which means this show is supported by members of Interfaith Alliance. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. And while you're there, please think about becoming more than a listener. Become a member of the Interfaith Alliance. Your membership can help keep State of Belief on the air. Make sure to tune in next week. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.